Oh, when I like a song, I make you all have to go through it. Last week, we started a new sermon series, Living Life Backwards, on the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, there was absolutely nobody here. It was our first sermon in the series, but there was nobody here. We had to do it on live stream. Keith was up here preaching to the camera. I was over there, had the production team back there. Jim Beatty was walking the halls for whatever reason, just out of habit. And it was a great sermon, and if you missed it, you can download it, listen to it. It really kind of is a necessary sermon for you to catch where we're going. It's kind of one of the preliminary things you got to get. So if you missed it, please listen to it. But I was listening to Keith preach last week. I kept thinking of that song by Kansas. It was a song that was a top 10 hit when I was in high school. And I remember thinking at the time when I heard it in high school, you know, because the lyrics are kind of depressing, right? I mean, it's a little bit nihilistic, it seems. I remember listening to it and thinking, you know, this guy is going to either commit suicide in a year or become a Christian. And he became a Christian. In fact, I got online to find out, is he still a Christian? How's that still going? And he's still a Christian. He's in Topeka, Kansas, goes to a church there, teaches Sunday school. So it'd be pretty cool to be in a Sunday school class taught by, you know, the main guy of Kansas and all that kind of stuff. Just think of the songs he makes them listen to. He says that in the interview that this song was taken, even though he wasn't a Christian at the time, he was reading through the book, the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes, and you can tell the song is taken directly from the book of Ecclesiastes. It's obviously put into different poetry for his purposes, but the theme is the same. In fact, you can see in some of the verses Keith looked at last week, for example, chapter 1, verse 4, it says, generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. People live, just a cycle of humanity going through this cycle of the earth, but the earth is billions of years old, and each life is sort of like a piece of dust in the wind. Verse 7, all streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. Verse 11, this is a real pick-me-upper. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. Somebody was asked, what's it going to be like 100 years from now? She answered, all new people. You think about it, 100 years from now, nobody's going to know any of us. I mean, nobody that's alive now is going to, unless there's some big, huge breakthrough, nobody's going to be alive. You look at film footage of 100 years ago, which they had film, you know, you're looking at these films, all those people are dead. Look at a photo 100 years ago. All those people are dead. And really, nobody knows who they are. And nobody's going to know, like Keith said, nobody's going to know who you are either 100 years from now. And so the writer of Ecclesiastes says in chapter 2, verse 17, all of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And that phrase is repeated over and over throughout this book. But there is something about the book of Ecclesiastes that seems to inspire some of the best songs in the last 50 or so years. The Byrds, back in the 60s, a band called The Byrds. Again, I'm talking to my generation here. I get it. But it's still cool music. You're missing something if you don't hear it. But The Byrds' song, Turn, 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 is really chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes, almost word for word. For everything, there is a season, a time for every moment under heaven, every matter under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, things like that. Coldplay has a song, World Turned Upside Down. And the phrase repeated over and over in that song is everything under the sun, which obviously comes from Ecclesiastes. That's the phrase that's repeated over and over in Ecclesiastes, everything under the sun, this sun that beats down on life, this sun that makes us thirst, this sun that gives us no relief is sort of a way things are, but they're not the way they're supposed to be. Life under the sun. The ancient book of Ecclesiastes is that kind of book. It is a book that inspires not just because of its sophisticated poetry, it certainly has it, but because it has this resonance with, it resonates with where we are today as a culture. In fact, I think it's way ahead of us where we are as a culture. It speaks to the things that we think are new. It speaks to the things that we think are novel and something new. And when we read Ecclesiastes, it laughs back at us from thousands of years ago and says there's nothing new. under the sun. But if the average person in this room read through the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes, I don't know if you have, if you read through it, you're going to kind of ask yourself by the time you're done, should this be in the Bible? This doesn't sound like the rest of the Bible. This sounds different. It sounds almost like some pagan nihilistic philosopher. Let me try to explain through this video here. Let's just watch this video what Ecclesiastes is. You know, when you come on staff at the Crossing, these are two staff girls, and I saw this posted on Instagram. You think life should be fun, life should be nice, you're working with nice people. All of a sudden, one person just shoves you into a snowbank, thinking that it's funny, and you're a good sport, so you laugh, and she helps you up. And in some sense, we could all use a good push into the snowbanks of reality. That's what the book of Ecclesiastes is in the Bible. It makes us, it forces us to resist simple formulaic approaches to life. And it intentionally pushes us into the cold snowbanks of reality because the world is full of cold snowbanks. And if you don't know that, if you're trying to live your life by faith in God, faith in the gospel, trying to experience this relationship with God, and you don't know about the cold snowbanks out there, you're going to get stuck in your faith. You might even slip off the road entirely. And so what's weird about Ecclesiastes is it's not gentle. It really pushes you right into it. Like the verses we read and like the verses we read. But this phrase, everything is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Like Keith said last week, I just want to cover it again because there was nobody here, that meaningless doesn't really mean in this sense futile, pointless. That's not really, although it seems like that to us, a better translation and the way it's most often translated has the idea of a vapor, has the idea of a breath, has the idea of something that is sort of a play upon words that is like as short as a breath. You can't keep it in your grasp. It's fleeting. It's like trying to chase after the wind. It's like trying to grab a cloud. You can't do it. And here's why. Because one day the dust of death will take from us and take us from everything and everyone that matters in this world. That's a push into the cold snowbanks of reality. That's what Ecclesiastes calls life under the sun. That's life outside of Eden, this side of Eden. God had created something, and we have this instinct for something that's completely different, but now we're not in Eden. Eden has left the earth. Now we're on the thorns and thistles of death on the planet Earth, and it is life under the hot, beating sun. And then you die. And the dust of death sweeps away everything that matters and sweeps you away from everything that matters. That's reality. Now, live your life. How do you do that? Today, the Chiefs are going to play in the AFC Championship. We got by the first playoff game. Yes, right. We got James and Jenna down here with their Chiefs gear. Completely inappropriate, by the way, to wear that in the front row. Kidding. The problem is we play the Patriots. Tom Brady has won 5 Super Bowls. Bill Belichick, not new to the game. These guys are going to have a plan. I know they're going to have a plan, and they can execute their plans. And so I hope we win, but we're smart people, right? We might lose. And this great season, this greatest season of Chiefs fans, Patrick Mahomes, all these offensive tools, the defense is starting to get their act together. If we lose, well, heck, it was such a great season. It's going to make us look back on this season. We're going to have a different feeling about the season. We're going to have a different feeling about the left-handed pass and the no-look pass and all that. It was fun while it lasted, but it was sort of, it eludes our grasp. The season got away. What happened? Ecclesiastes is saying, Begin with the end in mind. Your life, the dust of death is going to blow through your life, and it's going to change how you see everything in it right now. It just will. The end always changes the beginning and the middle all the way through. That's what death does to our whole life, the teacher says. So the teacher not only wants to force us to deal with the reality of death, but the teacher in Ecclesiastes, when we get to chapter 2, wants to force us to deal with what that does to the reality of pleasure and possessions and relationships and accomplishments. Let's look at chapter 2, verse 1. I said to myself, and this is the voice of Solomon, you know, the greatest king in Israel's history when it came to all these wealth and all that. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless, a vapor, something I couldn't grasp, fleeting. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. Now, I think what he means by that is it was intentional. I was doing it. I had a strategy. I was not just wandering around like a fool. My mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards and I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves. Now, Solomon was not a great guy. When you read his story, he fell apart. He's just being honest here. He's not prescribing, he's not justifying, he's just being honest. In seeking pleasure, he did everything. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasures of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem, not a good thing, just being honest, and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. In other words, I wasn't just an idiot. I had a strategy. I had a plan. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, fleeting, a vapor, chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Whatever the pleasure was, whatever that moment was, it was just a moment. And then it was gone. And this world under the sun will knock everything I've enjoyed and everything I've accomplished and everyone that has mattered in my life to dust. Because the dust of death and decay is going to always blow my way, and eventually it's going to render everything dust. Whatever moment is good is still just a moment. And then the moment's gone, like dust in the wind, like the song. Like this verse 18, everything was chasing after the wind. Or verse 17, verse 11. Where am I? Chapter 2, verse 17 says it too. It's repeated all throughout. I'm all confused. It's my first time back after a couple months. Give me a break. The teacher in Ecclesiastes, this voice of Solomon, is not a normal guy. He can do something very few of us can do. He can accomplish, he can get, he can acquire anything his heart desires. He says there in verse 10, verse chapter 2, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. And there are people today in our culture who can basically say the same thing because of their success, because of their fame, because of their money, because of their power, because of whatever it is. There are people who have arrived at a certain point in life where they really can buy, they really can do, they really can get anything they want. And for many of them, when you read their biographies or you listen to their interviews, you discover something, and that is that the more they talk, even though they can get whatever their heart desires, yet there's something still missing. They realized they're still not happy. There's something that they're still trying to chase after, happiness, transcendence, something that's bigger than themselves, something that's meaning, and it just eludes their grasp. Something big is still missing. And you see this, for example, we've said this before, but because we play the Patriots today, Tom Brady, after he won 3 Super Bowls, he's won 5 now, but after he won 3, he was interviewed on 60 Minutes. Tom Brady, really super good-looking guy, really successful, the most successful at what he does. He has aged so well. What is he, 67? And he's playing still in the NFL? And when Steve Croft asked him on 60 Minutes, you know, about what's missing in his life, he says this, this is what Tom Brady said, why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I think, God, it's got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. What's the answer? Steve Croft asked. And Brady replied, I wish I knew. I wish I knew. You've heard the quote by Jim Carrey. He says, I wish everyone could experience being rich and famous so they'd see it wasn't the answer to anything. Heck, even Kerry Livgren of Kansas, he says he wrote the song Dust in the Wind at a point in his life where he was just so down. Here he was, so successful. They were playing in big arenas. This is back in arena rock and roll, you know, and they had Carry On, My Wayward Son, and other hits. And yet there was something still missing in his life, and this is why the book of Ecclesiastes so resonated with him, and he wrote Dust in the Wind. When the Solomon of Ecclesiastes gets everything, he says he stands back and he surveys all of his empire of acquisition and accomplishment. All the music and all the drink and all the women, all the power over people, all the material possessions, all the land, all the luxuries a person could ever want, and he realizes that still doesn't make him happy. It's not the it. He says it's meaningless. It's still a vapor. It's still something I can't grasp. There's still something missing. I still feel like I'm chasing after the wind. And he says he absolutely hated life. But then he turns it around and does something really strange. He turns it around and he says that pleasures and possessions and accomplishments are good. They're good when they're not supposed to be the it, when they're not supposed to be the transcendent that you need for your soul, when they're not supposed to be what gives your life meaning, when they're not supposed to be what makes you happy, what fills you up. If they're not that, that's when they become good. When they are that, that's when they're absolutely meaningless and a chasing after the wind, and you're going to hate your life in the end. He says it this way, after completely ignoring God, not mentioning God at all, he finally says in verse 24 of chapter 2, a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too I see. Now we expect him to say, if you're reading Ecclesiastes, you expect him to say, this too I see as meaningless, a chasing after the wind. But he doesn't. He changes the pattern. And he says, this too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? See, at first it may sound strange. At first it may sound like the pagan philosophers who said, let's eat and drink and be merry for tomorrow we die. Let's eat and drink and be merry for that's all there is. He's not saying that. It's a little different. It's subtle. It's different enough, though, that's worlds apart. He's not saying, let's eat, drink, and be merry, for that's all there is. He's saying, let's eat, drink, and be merry, for that's what there is from the hand of God under the sun in this parched land, this side of Eden. Do you see the difference? The difference is key. Because the difference is, this is all there is forever, and he's saying, no, this is all there is for now, under the sun, temporarily. Give up. Give up trying to find meaning and happiness and transcendence in your pleasures, your possessions, your accomplishments, your relationships. And instead of trying to find all that, just see them as gifts from the hand of God to be enjoyed temporarily. They will only be temporary. So enjoy them with the perspective of temporarily, for now. But they will blow away. Don't think they won't blow away. Don't think they'll last forever. They won't. But they come from the hand of God now to be enjoyed now. Not in a hedonistic kind of way, but in a way that says this is something from the hand of God. And it points to God to be enjoyed now under the sun. And this is really super heavy, and this is really super, super crucial. It's going to sound weird to you, but this is the message of Ecclesiastes. This is a little bit of the push into the cold snow pile of reality. But this is really the important thing. When we own the fact, we start to grasp the fact, we're not living in some pretend Netflix world, keeping ourselves distracted by all the entertainment, but we finally grasp the fact of the end. We get the end. We get the dust of death is going to blow through. When we own the fact that the dust of death will eventually blow in and take everyone and everything from us, and take us from everyone and everything. That's going to happen. Here, let me just say it. Let me just say it. This is a raw reality. I'm not speaking just faith here. I'm speaking reality that is clear as anything scientifically proven. This is a fact. Every relationship you have is going to end in pain. It just is, right? The dust of death is going to blow through on one of you first. It's going to end in pain. There's no use pretending otherwise. Oh, don't talk that way. That's so morbid. That's so pessimistic. No, that's just the cold snowbank of reality, and Ecclesiastes wants you to catch it. It's life. You're not going to make it unless you understand it. Once you get that, once you understand that, a turn happens, a change happens. That's when we're free to enjoy the good things, the relationships, the possessions, the accomplishments, the pleasures, for what they are. Not ends in themselves, not ways that we find meaning, not ways that we bring the it in to fill up our lives, not the way that we have transcendence, but they're just things to be graciously enjoyed because they've been graciously provided by God as a gift for our enjoyment under the sun, temporarily. Knowing that we can't hang on to them. We're not going to hang on to them. We're not going to try. And when that's all we expect of the good things in our life, then they really do become enjoyable. They don't control us. We're not putting too much weight of expectation on them. We're not making them the it that they're not supposed to be to give our lives meaning and happiness and transcendence. We put that kind of weight on those things, it's going to break them. It's going to break our relationships. It's going to break the good things in our lives. And they become a snare. They control us and make us more miserable. This last week, if you have trees, you were concerned, right? That snow was so heavy, so wet. Trees in my backyard that I've loved for years just broke right in half. One of them, my favorite, was like this. It's hanging on. It's strong, but it was like this. Melt, melt. I don't want you to break. I'm too stupid to go out there and get the snow off. I just have to watch and hope. And finally, the snow melted, and the tree bounced back up, and that's the way it's supposed to be. The possessions in your life, the pleasures in your life, the relationships in your life, the accomplishments in your life, the good gifts of God given to you are supposed to not have all that weight. They will break, and they will break you. That's what the teacher is telling us. Real pleasure, real possessions, real people in our lives that are real gifts of God are enjoyed now when they point to something beyond. They point to a bigger narrative, something that really does last and something that really does fill. The teacher of Ecclesiastes says it this way, the last verse of the chapter. It's kind of strange, but he's saying it from his perspective. Verse 26, to the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and catch this, and happiness. So we could say this, to the person who has faith in God, because the Bible says that's what pleases God is our faith. To the person who has faith in God, God gives happiness. But to the sinner, the one who doesn't have faith in God, we all sin, right? But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth. In other words, it's this treadmill. You're just gathering, you're storing up, you're trying to find happiness, you're trying to find meaning, you're trying to find transcendence, but it's controlling you, it's ensnaring you. You're a slave to it, and you're going to eventually lose it. He's gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless. This is a grass, something that eludes your grasp, a chasing after the wind. There's that phrase again, over and over and over. The Solomon of Ecclesiastes looks over his entire empire and he says, you know what? It's an empire of dirt when it comes to providing happiness. It's meaningless. It's like chasing after the wind under the sun. There's nothing to it that gives me the it that only God can give. It doesn't have the meaning. It doesn't have the transcendence. It doesn't bring the happiness. Now, let me just, this is the point. All of this, those of you who follow Jesus, those of you who have faith in Jesus, what happens is we watch TV, we live in our culture, we breathe the air, we drink the water, we eat the food, and we develop the same mindset that we somehow think YOLO, right? We somehow think I have to have this to be happy. I have to have this to be happy. I have to have this. We put all this weight on things that won't do it because we're forgetting this narrative. We're forgetting this story that we're in. We're forgetting the fact that when a verse we didn't look at in Ecclesiastes 1:15 says, what is crooked cannot be straightened. What is under the sun cannot be fixed. We are this side of Eden, and Eden has not come back yet. Heaven has not come back yet. But Eden and heaven will come back to earth when Jesus returns. That's going to happen in the future. It's not always going to be under the sun. Jesus' death on the cross paid for the sin of sinners, but it also says it destroyed death forever. Jesus' resurrection is the future resurrection of all those who trust in him. It's the future restoration of what was supposed to be. It will no longer be this beating heat of life under the sun that is futile, meaningless vapors that we can't grasp, that's like chasing after the wind. It's going to be something that's real. It's going to be something that's substantive because it's changed everything. That's the narrative your life is in. You can't act like you're in this, stuck in this under the sun narrative forever. The only way you're going to keep anything, the only way you're going to keep anyone in your life, the only way you're going to keep your own life is in all that God is for you in Jesus Christ. That's the story of the whole Bible, of which Ecclesiastes is just a small part of the story. Like the teacher of Ecclesiastes, Jesus interrogates us and what we think real gain is, what we think real loss is. When he says in Mark chapter 8:36, what good is it? What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? You think life under the sun is the it? You can gain everything there is in life under the sun, and you are left with nothing but sand falling through your fingers. You're left with nothing but chasing after the wind. You have a sandcastle on the beach, and the tide is coming in. There's a better end in mind that changes how you see now under the sun. In 2003, Johnny Cash did this song, video of a song written by Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails. Now, Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails wrote the song Hurt as a nihilistic song. There's no purpose to life. It was very depressing, very nihilistic. The video is very depressing. But because Johnny Cash is so awesome, Johnny Cash took the exact same song, and because he sang it and the way he sang it, it changed the meaning entirely to the opposite. So much so that when Trent Reznor saw the video, he said he watched it, and at the end he says he was stunned in silence and he was on the verge of tears. He said, that's his song now. Even inspired him. The song was nominated for 6 MTV Awards for Best Video of the Year. It did win Best Video of the Year at the Grammys in 2004. It won Best Video of the Year the Country Music Awards in 2003. It's named by many of the trade magazines in the music industry as the best number one video ever made. And the director of the film, director of the video, said that what he thinks made it so powerful was that they filmed it in Johnny Cash's house, with all the disarray, everything in just broken shape, because Johnny Cash's health was deteriorating fast. And they just filmed it right there in his house with his things, with his wife. And in the video, Johnny Cash is looking much like the teacher in Ecclesiastes. He's looking back on everything he's accomplished in his life. He could have whatever he wanted, all the things that, and he certainly, if you know his story, lived a destructive life, a very successful life, destructive life, but he sort of turned things around toward the end. And here he is at the end, looking back over his life at the end. And I'll let you hear what he says. He says a lot like what Ecclesiastes says. And by the way, he died shortly after making this video. He died the same, just a few time later. Couldn't go to the awards that won it. Was dead. Let's take a moment and watch this video. Now, if you watch this sermon or listen to this sermon later this week, you won't see that video on there. We can't do it for copyright reasons, but you can simply Google Johnny Cash, Hurt. We've titled this sermon series, Living Life Backward. Because we think that's what Ecclesiastes challenges us to do, to look at the end. That's for sure coming. And when you know the end that's coming, well, it changes whether or not you want to be stuck in the middle under the sun, or to ask yourself, what is it that really lasts? What is it that really matters? And how do I live chasing after that instead of chasing after the wind? We remember the real narrative. We remember the larger story that we're in because Jesus died on the cross and rose from the dead. Let's stand now and remind ourselves of that story and what really lasts and what really matters in the end.